Doctor, look.
Stand aside, nurse. I'm Dr. Homebrew.
Stand clear. Oh.
Hey, everybody, welcome to Dr. Homebrew. For the next hour or so, we're going to be drinking homebrews, we're going to be talking to homebrewers, and then we're going to be making fun of Brian Cooper. And I would say Brian Shaw. I was going to normally say Brian Shaw, but Brian Shaw has had a terrible, no good, very bad day. So I don't want to
struggle with saran wrap Facebook plans.
What's up, fellas? Welcome to the show. Welcome back. Good to see you guys again.
Hey, thank you. Yeah. It's good to see you, sir.
I feel welcome.
And to hear you.
That's right. That's right.
And to hear Brian.
Well, Brian's Hearing Brian's is made possible by a grant from the Five Star Chemicals Foundation. Go to 5starchemicals.com. Learn about everything you need to do to make great beer at home, which is clean and sanitized. Everything we've ever covered 100 times over. Like I said, PBW is always good for just general household cleaning. I'm sure everybody has these, but like in their, stove hood. You know, that sucks up all the shitty fumes from when you burn your eggs or whatever.
Yeah.
Mine are, it's like sort of wide mesh stainless steel, I guess. I don't know. It's like this stainless steel mesh for the filters.
Yeah, kind of stuff, yeah.
Yeah, and it just catches the grease, right? And I soaked those in PBW the other day in my sink. Perfectly clean. Love it.
Wow.
PBW, then
I just try not to look at them, and that kind of solves the problem.
Well, you know what? Not to sound disgusting, like a slob who has no, you know, sort of, I don't know, anatomy in his brain for cleaning, but like, you get the grease in there, and it traps it, which it's supposed to do, and then it cools because you're not cooking anymore. But then you start cooking the next day, and then you notice a drip. Fall in, and you're like, where did that come from? It's not condensation.
Oh god, yuck.
Yeah, so you got to clean it every year. No, I don't know what it is.
Yeah,
but anyway, Five Star Chemicals saving my bacon, literally. Anyway, to start off the show, boys and girls, we are joined by Julio. Julio, welcome to Dr. Homebrew, dude.
Oh, thank you, man.
Yeah,
it's a pleasure.
You've been on before? No.
No, first time.
Oh. Okay.
Oh, nice.
Awesome. Well, welcome. You sent in a best bitter, which, number one, you already get 50 points for in my book. But also, because you send it in 22 ounce swing top bottles. Like, you're an animal, and I want to ask what's wrong with you.
Oh, because I fucking hate bottling 12-ounce bottles.
Yes. Yes,
King. I actually smashed a bunch of them with one of those decent, you know,
the bench top
ones.
Yeah.
So I got rid of it, and I switched over to flip tops when I could. I'm looking into canning, but it's just that extra hurdle of expense that it's like, all right, I got to get everything else sorted out before I jump into that.
Yeah, that's definitely like a nice to have is a canning, you know, a home canning system, which is. 5 years ago, you know, you would say that and you're like, okay, yeah, sure. Home canning system is a home brewer. Yeah. But now more beer has the cannula, I think is what it is. And it's supposed to be the thing.
Mm-hmm. And they wouldn't cost $300 to send across the country. So, you know, that's a plus too.
Oh, that is true. Yes. It did cost a pretty penny to send those bottles over.
Yeah.
So I have to ask, is there a reason you haven't thought about kegging?
It's because I'm in an apartment that I don't have a second fridge for. Before, when I was living at home, I had some space in my parents' place. Yeah. They had a second fridge, and I'm like, oh, we can – that. So I actually jumped into kegging first and then had to revert back into bottling.
Oh, damn, you devolved.
It happened.
Yeah.
And I noticed, too, each of these bottles has a logo on the top that says – it looks like it says Ogun, and it has a sword – stuck into the sand by a few rocks by a beachside with all kinds of tropical foliage in the background.
Liquid
squirts. It's kind of pretty. Is this a hand-drawn label or is this your custom brand or what is this?
So yeah, I'm working on it. I actually had a friend of mine do up the label for me. So I had an idea, you know, a concept, and then, you know, they were able to flesh it out for me and, you know, have it done this way.
What's the significance?
Of, yeah, pirates something or other, you know.
Like, yeah. What's the significance of it?
It's a machete. So Ogun was one of the Loas, you know, one of the voodoo, you know, patron saints, you would guess. Mm-hmm. And also, you know, they're sort of attributed to, you know, how Haiti was able to actually liberate themselves.
Okay.
So my family's from Dominican Republic. You know, we share a heritage with Haiti where, you know, our country isn't our country. You know, it was, you know, conquered by, you know, several people, and we're just the product of, you know, colonization.
Right.
Yeah. So Haiti on their end were, you know, they were able to liberate themselves, you know, from French's rule.
Yeah.
France's rule, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And Ogun was, you know, one of the legends that, you know, was able to do it.
Oh, nice. Ooh. Okay. Like a patron super saint cool. kind of a thing.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah.
Nice, man. I like it.
Yeah. Haiti has such a fascinating history. And they were the one place that was able to like kick out all the colonizers. And then they paid the price for it for like a century afterwards. And on top of that, it's like all the natural disasters those poor people have to just suffer through every 10 years. It seems like it's always a hurricane or earthquake or some terrible thing that happens to those guys.
Yeah, and now it's political.
that's never gonna, I don't know. We'll table that.
And we'll talk about best bitter.
Yeah. But that's cool, man. Never, that's cool. I like
never
it.
Say never. Never say never, man.
I like it. All right, well, let's crack this. And tell me about the best bitter, Julio. Is it something that you've done before? Or
no, this is a first time one-off. Basically, I'm into, you know, your realm of things where it's like, all right, how do I get a flavorful beer that doesn't, you know, murder me, you know, ABV wise?
Yeah.
Like alcohol is getting to the point where it's like, all right, I can have like a few and, you know, fall out myself.
Right. Welcome, buddy.
So yeah, I try to make an ESB and the numbers were a little low. So I'm like, it's a best bitter now.
Yeah. Which I sort of feel like this is how a lot of styles form. You know, you're doing one thing, like, this isn't very good, or not very good, but this isn't quite what I wanted. Let's call it another thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, awesome. So it's the first time. And since it sounds like you're sort of getting ready to think about doing a brand on your own and starting a brewery on your own, are you looking for, like, recipe feedback or just general sort of rating, or how can we help? How can we best help you to
all of the above, you know. Okay. Basically, since this is just my first time out, you know, actually putting anything for professional feedback, the closest thing I did was a homebrew competition for one of our local breweries.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you're familiar with Bluto Snort out of New Jersey.
No. Bluto
sounds
Snort?
Like I should be, though.
That
sounds,
yeah,
like a really cool name.
They do a lot of gimmick beers, I'd say, so like, mm-hmm, a lot of lactose. So their most famous beer is like, it's like a creamsicle. So it's, okay, you know, vanilla, orange, you know, I you know, so it's an IPA, but it's, you know, very soft.
Okay.
I don't want to, you know, trash them, but, you know, not my cup of tea. You know, it's very modern for beer. Let's
there
just
you
put
go.
It that way.
Very modern. Damn, that's a very polite way of saying I don't spend money there.
Very likely, yeah. Not JP's thing either, I would guess.
Yeah,
that's the kind of thing I would try like an ounce or two in like a taster, and be like, all right, I've had that, and then move on with my life.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, yeah. I don't know if I'd finish a can, but you know,
for sure,
it would be nice to try.
Well, how did you do in the competition? What did you enter, and how did you do?
So I entered in. It was a hibiscus wheat beer.
Okay.
So it was mostly a wheat beer, just with some hibiscus that I ended up, you know, throwing in during the whirlpool and a little bit during dry hopping. And that, they told me within the top 10, there were about 35 entrants.
That's pretty good, dude.
And the top beer was another hibiscus beer that just happened to have sea
no
salt
shit.
And watermelon.
Nope. Oh, okay. All right.
Wow.
Like, all right. So I they just needed that extra zhuzh.
Yep. That's right, dude. Zhuzh it up a little bit. You got to. I mean, I think hibiscus, that, I mean, they both sound great, but hibiscus, watermelon, a little bit of salt, sounds pretty good, man.
I know. I was so pissed that I didn't think first.
Fuck that guy. Find that person when you open up and do a collab with him. That's
oh,
a,
for sure.
It's a good idea.
Yeah. It's like, I lost with this, but you know, you did the better version. Let's pick you up. Yeah, man.
All right, Cooper, why don't you go ahead and start with Julio's beer, please?
Okay, yeah. The big, tall bottle with the swing top there had a low hiss when removing the stopper. And in the nose, I got a pleasant, low, toasty and caramel malt aroma, a little bit of biscuit, clean, somewhat fruity ale fermentation, but not too much fruit there. Medium low earthy hop is present, no DMS or diacetyl. Smells pretty good for style, like maybe a little light on the caramel. But you can have, it has a range. You can put a lot of different malts in there. Appearance wise, it's a light amber colored, beer with a medium low whitish head of mostly finer bubbles. When I was looking at the top of it, had a clumpy, like a little chunky kind of appearance to it. Like there was a lot of variation in the foam that formed on the top. So maybe there's some large chain proteins kind of clumping together in there or something it was an interesting looking, head. There is some slight, a fair amount of haze to the beer. It should maybe be a little bit clearer, but, we'll forgive that when we get flavor and everything else. The head actually had fairly good retention, but it's kind of fades and leaves a little, couple of open spots on the surface after a little while. Flavor wise, medium low bitterness, somewhat coarse in nature at the time. At the same time, even though it's like kind of light bitterness, it's not harsh, but it's kind of combining with the toastiness or something maybe. And when I'm retasting it today, I was like, is there maybe a tiny little light phenolic in there blending of something, but I'm not sure on that. If it is, it's very, very minor, but, the finish is nice and dry. And then that biscuity malt and lightly caramelly malt comes through, definitely balanced to the malt as it should be. Again, a kind of a low earthy hop flavor, toasty and biscuit malt lingers into the aftertaste with that edge of the bitterness. Very pretty dry. It seems like it's very well attenuated. Fairly clean fermentation. I didn't get any real off flavors, no DMS or diacetyl, but something just a little slightly harsh about the way the bitterness expresses itself, but it's not really, really biting or rough, but just a little coarse, I guess. But mouthfeel wise, it's medium light bodied with a medium low carbon dioxide. Not getting any warmth or creaminess to speak of. Just a bit of astringency here that I'm maybe picking up alongside that little rough, slightly rough edge. But it's just attracting someone. It's kind of a minor point. It's not like a really heavily phenolic beer at all. It's just a little bit of kind of like licking the grape skins, a little edge like that. But overall, it's not a bad version of the best bitter at all. To me, it was lacking some of the kind of clean bitterness of the style. It is a bitter, and the bitterness is kind of in the background. There's something that's kind of fighting with it a little bit there. What is there seems to clash just a bit with either the astringency or that kind of toastiness. That's something's a little biting or a little harsher impression overall. But the malts that are there are a good start. It seems like it. I would like a little more of a good clean caramel, kind of balancing that biscuit and toast that's there. Still very good, quite cleanly fermented. You can clean up that astringency pretty easily. Just kind of, use good water for the style and watch the sparge temperature, if you're sparging, or the steep temperature if you're steeping the grains. I'm not sure if you're doing all grain. We'll talk about that. I imagine you are. and the pH of the final runnings, don't let it go down below, come up above 6. And that'll probably improve the smoothness a little bit. But it was, again, an easy sample to finish, and I like the beer a lot. It comes into very good territory for me. I gave it a 34. So nice beer.
Oh, man. Appreciate it.
Excellent.
could use a little minor fine tuning, but hopefully we can help you with that.
Yeah. Sure. If not, imagine at the end of this, after Julio sent all this beer and spent all this money, we're like, I don't know.
Sorry, I couldn't help you.
Yeah, but I'll use it in cooking. I don't know. Brian Shar, go ahead, please.
Julio, I have to ask my standard question. Are you in a homebrew club?
I am not.
You are a lone wolf.
Yes.
All right, that's that's good. How long have you been brewing?
So I was doing the math. It's 13 years. So I started about 08, yeah.
Nice. Wow.
It was, freshman year of college?
Nice. Well, I mean, clearly it shows that you've had 13, your beer shows you've had 13 years of experience, which is real good. So the first thing, I mean, you know this, the big bottle with the swivel top is totally cool for sending to us. A lot of competitions are going to be like, what is this? And they shouldn't give you, it shouldn't affect your score, but weird things can affect your score. And receiving a non-standard bottle is one of those things that can kind of throw people off. So, I mean, as much as a pain in the ass to fill 12-ounce bottles, if you were sending it to a competition, you'd probably want to fill some 12-ounce bottles. But it's still, it was a nice hiss. There was some carbonation when I opened that up. Aroma, low aroma overall, which is appropriate for this style. I got sort of a low level of malt, a low level of fermentation fruitiness, low caramel, 9 out of 12. And a beer like this, I mean, this is looking at the commercial examples, right? Best bitter commercial example is London Pride. And London Pride, when it's fresh, the sad thing is when we get it in the U.S., unless you're going to like a real specialty beer bar or beer store, and maybe you guys out east probably get slightly fresher British beers than we do. But I mean, we in California, by the time London Pride gets here, most of the time it's so oxidized and caramel and cardboard, it's not even worth it. But damn, good fresh London Pride is amazing. And it does have a little bit of that. It has that kind of aroma from the fermentation. And I'll be curious to hear later on, like what yeast you used and what you did with that. Appearance, it was moderately hazy. At least the bottle that I got, low but persistent head. And that's the hallmark of the style too, right? It's a lot of these beers with low carbonation, these British beers, they don't have these giant heroic heads. They have like a low head, but it lasts a real long time. And yours did that. Color is sort of an amber light copper. Gave it 2 out of 3 for appearance. And that one point was for the haziness. And I think one of the things we want to talk about later. The flavor was initially a medium low level. Malt, you get sort of a caramel with a deeper undertone. That isn't roasty or toasty, but it's kind of complex. I'll be curious what your malt bill was. I'm kind of curious if it might be Victory or something like that. But there's some complexity in the malt here. In mid-palate, hot bitterness comes up the balance. I get sort of a low, earthy hop flavor as well. It's balanced maybe slightly to the malt in a long, pleasant finish. And definitely get, with the flavor as well as the aroma, that kind of characteristic British yeast fermentation flavor that people like to characterize as quote fruity unquote, but it's the flavor of good, healthy British yeast. And that was 14 out of 20. Mouthfeel, 4 out of 5, no warming, low body, low carbonation. It's expected for the style. Creamy rather than astringency. Astringent, but having said that, in the finish, I did get like a slight astringency, maybe from water adjustment. I'm not quite sure, but I did, that's knocked that down from 5 to a 4, a little bit of an astringency in the finish. Overall impression, gave it a 7 for a total of 36. I like this beer a lot. The slight, if you're just, it's kind of this is one of those beers where it's so light and there's so much going on, but it's all going on at kind of a subtle level, if that makes sense. That even like a little bit of stuff being off can kind of throw it off. And to me, that kind of maybe it's just my, you know, my palate just now. Maybe it's just my bottle. But I that astringent at the end made me wonder, hell, is there maybe too much water adjustment? Did you adjust your water at all? Am I just trying to think of things that are wrong? I don't know. But, having said that, this is still definitely in the very good range. I like this.
Yeah.
And I still have its second bottle in my fridge, and I'm not getting rid of that other than through my mouth to and consume then, that and drink that at a later time.
And then out of his penis. That's how the rest of that works.
I didn't want to say that, but since you brought it up, I mean, that's usually where pee goes.
That's right. That's why it's called a penis.
Yeah.
All right. Did you give final score, Brian? I didn't.
Final score is 36.
36. Okay. Yeah. Wonderful. Before we get into it, I mean, I echo a lot of you know what everybody said. It is kind of a tough style to do and to do really well.
Yeah.
I do think that, I don't know. I mean, is that a little too bitter? Or maybe that's the astringency you guys are talking about?
Yeah, I would like a little more like nice clean bitterness, you know, mm-hmm. Just get that bitter impression and a little more kind of caramel maltiness to play off of that.
Yeah.
But
I would like a little more malt in the mouth and the body, a little bit more malt flavor. What are you doing?
And maybe that's also a function of it being a little like a watered down version, so to speak, of an ESB style, where I started out trying to be something, and then you can't just lighten up an ESB and it's suddenly a best bitter. You need to make your own, you know. I mean, there is a lot of crossover, of course, but you have to it's its own animal for sure.
It is, but I think the grain flavoring, all that kind of stuff, is very good. The flavor is good.
Oh yeah,
it just needs. You know, it needs a little tweak. Anyway, Julio, let's answer some of these guys' questions. Sure. Can you run us through your recipe real fast, please?
All right. So this was 8 pounds Maris Otter, 8 ounces of Caramel 10, 8 ounces of Victory, 4 ounces of Caramel 120, and that was it.
I nailed the Victory. Woohoo!
Yes, you did. I smirked immediately. I was like, wow, that's really good that you picked that out. And then for hops, East Kent Goldings, 2 ounces, and 1 ounce of Halotel Blanc.
Okay.
All right. And what about water adjustments? That was Brian Shar's.
So I think I did add some gypsum to it. I've been a little concerned that I've been using Poland Spring water, which is, you know, something I would drink, you know, typically. But that's what I've been using for beer. So I haven't done adjustments to that since recently. So I'm trying to see if I can add something that would clean it up a bit, because I was having a little bit of issues with like mouthfeel. Like it wasn't as carbonated as I'd like it. Not with this style, at least.
Water is important in this kind of a beer, too. You want it to be right.
Yeah, it really is. And it's one of those things where I get, as I've, like everyone else pretty much, I've had times where I've lived wherever and you just go get the drinking water, not the distilled water or the RO water. And like, okay, I'll just use this as a base. But unless you know have some general idea what the minerals are in there, adding more minerals can kind of exacerbate problems rather than solve them.
I know I did check sort of their water profile. So it wouldn't, the things that I was adding wasn't out of bounds. It was something that could have probably fit in, but it probably just didn't work with this, you know, water, as you're saying. Yeah.
Yeah. Could be.
Okay.
What kind of yeast did you use on this beer?
Oh, Saffale. Really? SO4. Yeah.
Wow.
So dry yeast. So this and I should keep my mouth shut.
it attenuated very well. We'll say that. So. Mm.
Yeah, it did attenuate really well.
What do you think, Brian? Would you tell him to back away from that Victory malt a little bit, or did you like the complexity that added?
No, I really like the complexity the Victory malt added. It's not like a huge amount. It was a few ounces, right, Julio?
Yeah, 8 ounces. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's appropriate for a beer like this. I mean, you need, whether it's something you're just trying to drink yourself because you like it or because you're in competition, you need a little something to help you stand out. And, you know, roast toast is really kind of inappropriate in this style, but I think Victory gives you that little extra sort of undertone, that little oomph, that if you don't use Victory, a lot of folks aren't going to do that. That'll help you stand out in competition. I liked it.
Oh, man. Yeah, because I needed to add something, because everything that I was looking at was mostly like maris otter and some and caramel, and I just needed to add like at least another, you know, bit of complexity to you know, make it a little different. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, it makes sense. And you know, maris otter, you can't go wrong with maris otter in pretty much any style. That's just great malt. But you're right. If everyone else is doing maris otter and caramel, you put a little maris otter, caramel, and a little victory, you know, hey, you stand out.
Yeah, some of them will use you know, caramel and use some darker malts to give it a richer color. I mean, you can go all the way up to SRM 16 on these beers. They can get pretty richly kind of coppery colored. You know, there's a lot of different ways you can let them express themselves. I was wondering though, how do you do anything to try to clarify the beer? Do you use any
Whirlflock?
Whirlflock in the kettle. You know, you can use things like either gelatin finings or, you know, like a biofine or anything, like, you know, different kinds of finding agents to try to get that clarity a little brighter.
Other yeasts that I use, typically it clears out. But this one, it's the first time I've used you know, SO4. So I'm pretty sure that's why it's, you know, hanging around. Haze is definitely attributed to the yeast.
Yeah, it's not super crazy hazy, but gelatin will definitely drop that out and get a good dose of that in there. It might take away a little bit of the hop. If you're planning to use gelatin, you want to bump up the hops just a little bit, you know, 10% or something. But yeah, that's one trick. It does work really well. You end up with kind of a goopy, you know, mess at the bottom of your fermenter that you need to deal with. So I'm not really a goopy mess. It just kind of solidifies and congeals and goes to the bottom. You just have to avoid it when you're racked. You have to rack pretty carefully.
Yeah, for sure. Well, Hulu, do you have any more questions for the guys? Did they answer everything?
So basically look at my water and possibly, bump up the caramel sweetness.
And you know what? I would consider the saff ale. There's nothing wrong with that. Mm-hmm. And if you like how that works, you know, there's a lot of advantages to using saff ale. You can really pitch a lot of it and not have to worry too much about a starter or anything. You might look at like one of the White Labs British options or some of the other yeast companies and kind of, you know, maybe talk to, do you go to like a local homebrew store or like order online or?
Yeah, order online. So I'm basically, you know, in a silo by myself.
And that's cool. You know, we all do that. But you might, you know, go to like morebeer.com and just kind of check out some of those White Labs British choices and kind of see. I don't know. There are so many yeasts anymore. I can't like just bust out a yeast number like, oh, go get a WLP blank.
Can't do it.
But there's a lot of different British yeasts, and you might just kind of play with that.
No, I agree with you. Most of the times I do do liquid yeast, and I, you know, build a starter and I do all that. Mm-hmm. It's just that I actually looked at a video recently by like not even this dry yeast brand, but it was another one saying, hey, do you know the advantages of actually using dry yeast? Just because they can pack in a lot more cells and you know, a smaller, you know, package, and also they're not prone to damage in the same way. So there's it was just something that I was just looking into to see if dry yeast is viable. A lot of, you know, commercial places, they, you know, thrive on it. So it was seeing, you know, what's possible.
There's nothing wrong with dry yeast, and especially in 2021. I mean, 1995, that was maybe a different story.
Yeah.
Yeah. When I started back in 2008, same idea. It's like, same thing, man. I want to use liquid.
Well, you know, and it's, I always go back to they pick the yeast strain for the dry yeast, depending on how well it survives and rehydrates rather than the flavors that it gives. But I wouldn't have been able to guess that this was a dry yeast or safe ale because
I wouldn't have thought
it depends on how you manipulate your fermentation and how good your ingredients are. I wouldn't have guessed. I mean, thinking about it now, okay, maybe it was a little too clean, and I wonder how much more you could have impacted this beer to make it taste on style even more so by the yeast, you know, selection. But I mean, definitely play around with it. Try everything. I mean, now this is the time when you're a home brewer, fucking throw the kitchen sink at the damn thing. See what happens. You know, split it up. Do these little 1 gallon, whatever you want to do, man. Safe fail. I think it worked for this beer. I think if you do it again, it'll be just fine too. Maybe you just manipulate the fermentation temp a little bit. Maybe drive some of those esters. But
yeah, I think I might do it a little bit warmer because that one I kept pretty chilly. I was maintaining that, you know, close to like 62.
Oh, yeah. 72.
Yeah,
at least 68. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if they go in the 70s, but if you can control it to the high 60s, I'd probably do that.
Well, look, I'm not a coward, guys. I'm not afraid of shit. I will dab on every single.
I'm afraid of everything. So, yeah, I'm not going to go to 72 for that.
Yeah.
No, I think, yeah.
This was the one beer where I flipped every convention I normally do.
Yeah.
You know, I usually do warmer. I do, you know, everything. You know, this is why I wanted to send it to. It's like, all right, let's see. Have I been bullshitting myself this whole time? Or like, let's see if we just send something.
Well, but this is also the hard part about giving feedback, corrective feedback on a beer like this. Because you didn't do any of the things that we're normally commenting on. So it's. I feel, at least, and maybe the Bryans don't, but I feel like, well, if I say this, it's not what he did anyways. So of course it tastes like this because this was the process. So it's like, you know, I don't know, but hopefully you got something out of it.
Oh, definitely. Oh, it put you know, at least different palates into it where it's like, okay, now I understand what other people are tasting from it.
Okay.
Yeah. I agree with the temperature suggestion too. I think that's a good idea because a little fruitiness is going to pull away from some of those like harsher, like more, even the astringent kind of what's coming across is a little astringency in the finish. If you had a little bit of fruitiness in there blending with it, it's going to accent that carameliness and let it kind of shine a little better.
Definitely. Yeah. I was just scared about just the mouthfeel of it. Like it was already low. I think I had it. This is probably a 3.5% beer, maybe less than that, honestly.
Yeah.
So you know what? You packed a lot of flavor into a 3.5% beer. It's not watery. It's not, you know, a lot of times beers like this are limp and watery and just kind of uninteresting. Mm-hmm. Like, all right, I'll drink some of this. Let me move on to something that tastes better.
Yeah.
This tastes really good. Yeah. You know, you managed to get a lot of flavor and a lot of aroma into, you know, a 3.5% beer. And that's something. That's an achievement. And there's a reason why, you know, we gave you a score that's in the, you know, like the high, very good, you know, that range. I mean, it is very good.
Oh, all right, then I'm thrilled about it then.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay.
There you go. All right. Well, if that's it, we'll let you split.
Yep.
I have a feeling we'll be talking to you again sometime.
Maybe. You'll never know.
I can't imagine.
Yeah. All right, Julio. Thanks, man.
Sure.
Take it easy.
Thanks, Julio.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, everybody. When we come back, we're going to have yet another beer and another homebrewer to speak to. Hang on, everybody. It's Dr. Homebrew. We'll be right back.
I'm sorry to tell you this, but we're going to have to pour you out.
Back to Dr. Homebrew.
All right, welcome back, everybody. We have John on the line here. John, welcome to Dr. Homebrew. And more importantly, thank you for sending us beer, Judge.
Of course.
John, I think John has a nicer background than any of us. I mean, mine I have to obscure with the fake trees. I was noticing JP's background changed since the last time we saw him, too. He's got Luke Skywalker up there in the background.
That's right, man. Hey, I didn't know that.
Oh.
Here's my Luke Skywalker picture. You know, signed. It's not
a little blurry.
A little out of focus.
Aren't
that's
a little
how it
short
is.
To be a stormtrooper?
See, oh, hey, there's a signature on there. What?
And there's a certificate of authenticity.
Rad, dude.
The cool story. Nice. It's a good story. When I was like, oh, I don't know, 12 or 14, maybe, I'm going to assume, something like that. It was like one of the it was probably Home Shopping Network or something like that, where they were like selling signed, framed, mounted, you know, this thing, right? And I'm like, oh my God, actually 1996. So I was older than that. I was probably too old to be doing what I'm about to tell you I did. I really wanted it. And I happened to see a receipt on the table at my mom's house. And that was back when receipts still had the credit card, like the full credit card number printed on it.
Oh my God. Yeah. I remember those days.
So I got the credit card number off my mom's fucking thing, man, my receipt. And, I credit card frauded her for it. And, you know,
she must be very proud.
Well, I don't know. I don't think she was. I think she was very upset. But I mean, I don't know. That was my mom. She would never get mad. She would just get disappointed. And then, I don't know. That was it. And then
you actually made a good investment, son. Now in the 2020s, it's worth a lot more than it was worth in 1996 or whatever.
Is it? I don't know. Tell me.
I'm sure.
I'll sell it right now. Actually, should I wait till he dies and then sell it? Or is the market better before when he's in the current, Twitter
sphere? Just keep it forever. And then, when you die, just will it to me or something. I don't know.
Oh, Dad. That's. I like
Shut
how you think you're going to outlive
me. Smashers at the detention level. Whenever I see Luke in that stormtrooper uniform thing, that just always makes me laugh. It makes me happy.
Shut them all down.
all right, John, you sent over an imperial stout with bourbon and coconut. Is this a reoccurring theme for you? Have you made this before? First time.
No. So this is my first attempt at kind of a bigger beer. I really haven't brewed anything over 0.65 or so. So this is kind of first go at it.
All right. Wow. I love it, man. I love it. Why an imperial stout with bourbon and coconut as your first run? I guess if you're gonna do it, you might as well just do it.
Yeah, go big. So right. There you go. Usually we have my cousins over for Christmas and we kind of love to do some holidays themed beers, but I never did anything big, so I really wanted to try my hand at something a little bit bigger.
Nice, man. I like that. I like that. Yeah. Get a little family aspect going.
There you go.
Okay, cool. Well, Brian Schar, why don't you start us out here with this lovely category 33B?
Definitely. So, yeah, John, good job on your first big beer. I mean, you think you did a fantastic fantastic job here. Are you in a homebrew club?
No, frequent the local homebrew club or homebrew store, but still a lone wolf.
Where, but local, where are you located?
So Maryland, in between Baltimore and DC, Maryland Homebrew is my local shop. Yeah, they're awesome.
Nice.
Yeah.
And there's got to be a lot of great places to go between Baltimore and DC too, just to have good beer and good food and everything else.
For sure. We got Sapwood Cellars and those guys in, so it's kind of blowing up with good beer places.
Nice.
Very nice.
Yeah.
So yeah, I really like this beer aroma and I think overall, just kind of set my score sheet down for 2 seconds. One of the things I really liked about this beer was that it was subtle and balanced. It was not a beer that slapped me across the face with bourbon or coconut or vanilla. It's everything was kind of subtle. It was all there and it was all harmonious. But none of it was we got to go super big with some of these ingredients. So the initial aroma, I got some toasted coconut followed by a hint of bourbon and some dark / roast malt. It's complex and subtle. The bourbon's not beating me over the head. Get some low vanilla there from the wood. Didn't really get a lot of wood aroma. No off aromas. So that's 10 out of 12. Appearance, 3 out of 3. Color is extremely dark brown. If the sun wasn't setting outside my living room window, and if I wasn't holding that up next to the sun to see the brown, it would be essentially black. And yeah, JP is holding for anyone watching this live on Facebook or later on YouTube. Yeah, you can see it's very dark brown, but there's almost nothing that's in life that's actually all the way black. Most things are just super dark brown and you just don't shine enough light on them to know. So the color's really great. Head is low and persistent. It's hard to get head sometimes in beer that's this strong, especially when you've got it's been in wood and it's had bourbon. So the fact that it's there and it's persistent is really good. Hard to determine how clear it is with a beer that's this dark, but it looking kind of the edges of the glass, it looks clear. So 3 out of 3. Flavor wise, first impression is coconut and then dark malt slash roast slash chocolate. Get a little chocolate character there. Hot bitterness comes up to almost balance mid palate, but this is a beer that to me is still malt focused and it's kind of balanced a little more toward the malt. No discernible hop flavor, but that's okay. This is not a style that requires a giant amount of hop flavor. Well attenuated. You know, it's difficult when you're brewing, whether it's a wood aged or not, you're brewing something that's going to be 10, 11, 12%. You know, if this is the first time you've done that, then, you know, kudos to you, man, because it's difficult to get big beers to attenuate sometimes. And to get it to be well attenuated the first time around shows you have some mastery and control over your fermentation process. And that's really important. Finish is long and balanced. I gave it 16 out of 20 for flavor. Mouthfeel, 5 out of 5. It's definitely warming in a very pleasant way, kind of right here in the chest. You know, it's weird how sometimes warming is different. It shouldn't be different, right? I mean, it's alcohol, and you're ingesting it, and it should always be the same thing, right? But sometimes warming is strange. Sometimes warming is like in your ears, and sometimes you get it right here, but you get like a nice warming just mm-hmm. right here in the upper chest.
Brian Seinfeld starting a stand-up act.
keep working that angle there.
No, it's not a comedy. It's just sometimes
you're right. No, I know.
You'd think that alcohol. I mean, alcohol is alcohol, right?
Right.
You think that it's going to have. It should always have the same effect at a certain concentration, and it doesn't. And that's part of the mystery and fun of beer or wine or anything like that. You know, yeah. It's just different, and it has different effects on you. And it's not always clear why, and it's just kind of fun. You know, it's a full body, medium low carbonation, creamy 5 out of 5 mouthfeel. Overall impression, I gave it 8 for a total score of 42. This is a really amazing beer. I love the subtlety with regard to the bourbon and the wood aging and stuff. It's if I had a thing to change, it's almost a little bit too subtle to me in some ways. And I appreciate a wood aged, you know, bourbon based beer that is not like clubbing me over the head with bourbon and wood. Right. It's because we've all had those. Right. And it's like you're going to put something in a barrel you're going to put it in with bourbon. It's going to sit there for years. That's going to come out and like, holy crap, you know, that's satin wood. You know, there's some bourbon and that's good to a point, but it lacks subtlety and complexity. But I almost wonder if yours is a little bit too subtle, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So maybe a little more wood time, a little more bourbon, but overall, I mean, 42 is in the right in the middle of the excellent range. I'm going to be drinking the rest of this while Brian Cooper's talking.
Let me ask you a question, Char. Do you think it's a function of I don't think this is the case, but do you think it's maybe too much coconut? And because I get coconut all the way through, and then at the end it almost acts like a sweeper or like a Hoover, just hoovers up a lot of what I would consider what I should be tasting in the finish. So I think I think the coconut maybe sort of extends a little bit too much and maybe clean and maybe keeps everything subdued. I don't think it's too much flavor. It's too long. And I know that makes no sense.
I don't know that I'm perceiving that, okay. But I understand your point. And I think because coconut flavor, coconut's an oil.
Yeah.
And I'm not a chemist. You know, the chemistry I know from brewing and LED lighting. It's kind of funny. But two Same. Totally different things. I'm not a chemist, and I got to think that, you know, maybe if you're getting a lot of coconut all the way through, then maybe that oil is interacting some way with the wood or the vanilla to maybe keep that down a little. You know, I don't know. It's a good point, JP.
Okay. Cooper, go ahead, please. Tell me I'm wrong.
All right. I will tell you you're wrong. No, I will just for fun, but yeah. Okay. So the had a nice bottle. It was very, very cleanly labeled with like printing on it, and you could read and understand exactly what the beer was and how to judge it. So that was cool from a judging perspective. So it's declared as an imperial stout with bourbon and coconut as a 33B, which is a wood aged, a specialty wood aged beer. So I'm going to be looking for both the, you know, the coconut and the bourbon and some wood aging generally, but yeah. So, oh, of course, you know, usually bourbon is aged on wood too. So, you know, someone could get really crazy and just add bourbon to beer, and then, you know, anyway, we'll talk about the recipe later.
Okay.
richly chocolatey nose, nice, really first, just clean presentation, nice, clean fermentation, really nicely done there. And with a big beer like this, that's not easy. Pleasant coconut alongside that, rich chocolatiness. There's not any like real roast sticking out. It's just pure, like, you know, dark to medium dark chocolate. It's just smooth. And there's a definitely smooth and firm alcohol in the nose as well. Kind of a medium high level, but it's really not poking out harshly at all. It's like, and there are differences in alcohol. Like alcohol can be pure ethanol is one thing. When you brew, you're not making just pure ethanol. You're making a blend of different alcohols. There are always going to be a mix of some higher alcohols and even, you know, just, you know, probably methanol mixed in, every, you know, just small fractions of it. But every little fraction of a percent of something else that's in there and bumping up makes the impression of the alcohol harsher, not only in the aroma and the flavor, but also the mouthfeel and the warming aspect. So I think I'll get, well, anyway, I just wanted to say that. on back to the nose. Low bourbon character overall, and not really much in the way of a barrel character. Biscuity malt alongside the chocolate. There is some slight kind of nice warm coffee, you know, kind of medium roast coffee. Some moderate fruity esters in there. Really not getting anything in the way of hops with everything else that's going on here. Appearance-wise, it is a rich blackish brown color. Not totally opaque, looks clear at the edges, has a low tan head that stuck around quite well, despite the fairly obvious strength and the oils that are there. The bubbles that are there are mostly finer in size. And yeah, I've been sipping on this one for a while. The head dropped down and it leaves just a little collar there that's still kind of perking up every once in a while. As you kind of swirl it, it'll pop up a little bit. Flavor-wise, just richly malty with smooth, semi-sweet chocolate notes, most prominent, low hop bitterness, clean ale fermentation. The clean, lightly toasted coconut flavor adds a lot here and really complements the style. The bourbon note, again, is very low to me, with only a faint, what you could call a wood-like character. You get a little bit of something that seems like, oh, maybe a little oak, but to the very last, like, finish, and as it dries out and goes down the throat, then you're left with a little bit of that in the aftertaste. But I think that you're probably right that the oils from the coconut just kind of coat your tongue and cover up some of that other stuff and don't let it shine through as much, maybe. But I'm not saying back off the coconut, because I really do like the level that the coconut's at here.
Yes, same.
It's a semi-sweet finish, I would say. Definitely balance of the malt. There's a slight bit of roast, just a touch. And maybe I got like kind of a very faint floral hop flavor. There's not much in the way of hops here. The bitterness is, again, low, but it's just kind of out of the way. And some of the bitterness is coming from the malts. But it's at a good level for this beer. It's not coming across too sweetly or too bitter. It's just, that's right, that works. Mouthfeel medium full bodied, with low smooth alcohol warming, low creaminess. I'm not getting any astringency or any kind of biting quality at all. It's a nice, easy sipping beer. But then I challenged myself. I'm like, okay, let's I had to finish the sample and judge something. I was like, okay. Then I took kind of a fast sip and I was like, okay, yeah, that is it does let you know that it's got some substantial.
It got your ass, dude. Blasted you from across the country.
Yeah, that you can't pound it. Obvious strength there, sure.
I mean, you can, but
you know, the carbonation is kind of medium, maybe maybe medium high. It had a real good hiss when I opened it up. The pretty strong hiss, at least on the first bottle. I didn't really pay attention when I opened this one, but it was like really, really okay. This is a pretty spritzy beer for such a big one. And but it's not, you know, giving any like harsh carbonic bite or anything really either. But it's noticeably like carbon dioxide just keeps pushing up, and it's there very firmly. Maybe a tad too much, but it's not hurting it too badly, really. Overall, this is a very pleasant drinking specialty wood-aged Imperial Stout with a lot going for it. It hits a lot of the key components for style. Very pleasant coconut. I don't know how you processed that and what you did to it. It's, you know, pretty nice as it is, standing up to this very robust style. And I've had some coconut stout. Coconut just really does work nicely with stout when you do it right, an Imperial Stout.
Yeah, I'm really
bad. I've had some other ones that are just really, you know, fantastic too. It's like, I finally got these, you know, like, you know, the Belvita breakfast things. And mm-hmm. I was in South Dakota with my mom.
Those things rock, dude.
She's like, have you ever tried the coconut ones? And I'm not like, I don't seek out coconut. I'm not a coconut mm-hmm. guy. I don't eat German chocolate cake, even though I speak German. I just like, okay, just you can keep the coconut. I was like, no, just try it. Like, okay. So, you know, it's like had this nice toasted coconut quality to these biscuits, and I'm not advertising for that product. I'm just, it's a nice flavor when it's done right. And it's got that nice edge of a toasted quality along with, you know, with a biscuit, which is a bread product, you know, along with malt components. It's like kind of similar. It expresses itself well against that. You know, maybe you could buy some of those and dip them in the stout here and see how that tastes. That would be fun. You know, the only thing I say is that the bourbon is obscure. The bourbon is there, pretty obscure. I'm not sure, you know, does it need it? Can you do this as just a coconut only stout and skip the bourbon, or
crazy,
you know, declare it as a spice or vegetable beer. There is a little bourbon there, but I'm not sure that it's either up to the level where it needs to be. And I'm wondering what it would taste like if it was. Would it be better? Would it be, you know, less interesting? You know, I don't know. You could maybe, if you toasted the coconut, I think even toasting it just a little bit more might, if it's already toasted, bring up that nice richness of the coconut. I just love the way it's expressing itself, and even a little, you know, it's so smooth. It could stand to even like with the smoothness of the beer, and it's just everything smooth. Give it a little more like aggressiveness almost in that way. Or you could also bring up the, you know, kind of a smooth oakiness and a bit more booze. You could definitely get away with a bit more booze. I don't like beers that are just over the top booze only. And that's all you taste. And it just, you know, it overpowers the beer. In this case, it's there very faintly alongside the beer style, and get a little bit of it. And that's a nice balance, but to me, it's a little too loaded to, you know, you could declare it. And it's, I don't know. I had trouble getting a big booze character, but JP, you're a booze guy. I'm not really a booze drinking guy.
No, I think the booze is there. I think it's there. Yeah, I wouldn't go any farther. I want to learn how it was added and what kind, because that does make a difference.
So I landed at a 38 on this beer. I thought it was excellent. And, you know, I really enjoyed it for what it was. And you could drink a lot of this over a, you know, on a winter's day in front of a fire, and just like, wow, that's a nice sipper. So I just, as to
are you,
style
are you
for
hitting
me,
on John right now?
Yeah, sure. It's got a nice, you know.
I'm not sure I'd want to drink. This is a great beer. I'm not sure how much of a lot of this I could drink or should drink.
Right. No, it's a dangerous one for sure. But no, it's definitely tasty. Were you finished, Coop?
I was. Yeah. Right. 38, and I would drink a bottle of it and then stop myself, because then that's going to be a problem.
Yeah. I personally think that there's enough bourbon in here, but again, I want to figure out how it was added and what kind. The oak I think could come up a little bit. I think the coconut could come back just a little bit, but it's one of those like micro adjustments where if you go too far back, you're going to blow the whole thing, because it's a really nice addition. I also think that you could maybe add something a little bit later on in like the palate, like a little more chocolate malt, or like a little more, for me, I wanted a little more to carry through the end, but I don't know if that's a function of, for my palate, for my taste, the coconut, like I said, is sort of coming through, and I wonder if it's sort of just like squashing things at the late palate. But anyway, let's hear from you, John.
And what about adding some chocolate or some coffee or
pale
something
chocolate. I thought like this beer sort of, I think, would really do well with a nice coffee addition, some cold brew coffee or something like that. But anyway, let's go over your recipe, and then we'll go over your process and figure out what we're even talking about, because we might be totally wrong.
No, you guys were like really spot on like 99% of this. So
thank you.
This is a 6.5 gallon recipe brewed in July 11th this year.
Wow.
And actually, since I hadn't done this before, I want to give a shout out to Brandon. So he was a guy that was on episode 174, the infamous coconut hammock episode.
Nice.
You guys remember that one? I loosely based my recipe, because I was kind of flying blind on that recipe, which he scored excellent. So I figured it was a good starting point.
Nice, man. That's cool.
Yeah, it was nice. So water chemistry was built up off tap, added K-meta to reduce chlorine, chloramines, gypsum, calcium chloride, and pickling lime. My mash was 5.51. Calcium was super high because of the pickling lime, so that was 225. Mag at 5, sodium 13, sulfate 36, chloride 104, so almost the 3-to-1 chloride to sulfate ratio. The grist was Maris Otter 68%, malted rye 6%, flaked oats 5%, roasted barley 5%, 3% each of Crystal 40, Crystal 60, and Crystal 120. Cane sugar was 3%, 350 Lovibond chocolate at 2%, and crisp pale chocolate 220 love at 2%.
That's a lot of small malt additions.
and it works. And it's interesting is that the advice we always give people and the advice you always hear is keep it simple with your malt bill. But you know what? This malt bill tastes real good.
Usually a proponent of trying to keep it simple for like pale ales and whatnot, but everybody that's done pretty well on this show has kind of had pretty complex for like these bigger stouts. So I kind of went with that kitchen style approach. Hops were simple, 40 grams of Magnum at 60, nothing else. Mash was a double infusion, beta sac rest at 146 for an hour, alpha sac rest at 154 for an hour. And it landed at 1.100 OG, attenuated down to 1.024. And I used Cefalo 5, 2 packets and a 2-liter starter, oxygenated. And then as far as handling, fermented at 65 to 66, did a de-rest at about 80% attenuation. And then cold crash and primary, pressure transferred to a purge keg. And then this is where I kind of threw in all the adjuncts. So inside of the keg, I had 1.3 pounds of toasted coconut. I did it at 350 in the oven. And I kind of had that in a hot bag. So I kind of transferred on top of that. I also had 1.5 Madagascar vanilla beans that were gutted in the keg. And then as kind of Cooper was alluding to, I added 5.5 ounces of Woodford Reserve double oak to the keg. So obviously this is worthy of discussion. So
I had some inside information. Sorry.
Yeah.
I didn't mean to spoil that, but
No, it's very subtle, but I've certainly picked up on it. I feel like I've gotten myself into trouble with oak before. And so I figured, if I add like a Woodford Reserve double oak, it won't over oak it, but it'll still have enough oak so that I can declare it in this specialty category.
That's a good thought process. I like that.
It is a good thought process.
I have to agree.
You can oak it further.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, you can oak it further. I like Woodford. I feel like Woodford is too mellow. It's too smooth for something like this.
Yeah.
Because, like Cooper was saying, you could add more bourbon. I don't think you can add more bourbon. I think you can add different bourbon. But I would also get cubes and I would soak them in the bourbon and then put them on for a month and not taste it. Just let it sit for a first month. Because what happens when you do oaking, especially with like cubes or with anything, the first couple of weeks, you're like, oh, shit, this is too, it's too much. And you freak out. But a lot of the sediment and the char sort of falls to the bottom where your dip tube is, and you pick it up, and it's just this weird like thing. But I mean, oak cubes, you can let them go, you know, 4 months.
And something not, a little gnarlier. Like, what do you think about like a rye or something?
You could do you could definitely do a rye for sure. Like a rye whiskey. But, you know, I think it's just something, cause you, John, you I'm imagining you drink Woodford.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, people don't just have Woodford double oak like hanging around because they want to brew with it. But you know what I mean? Like for me, it's just it's a very smooth, rounded bourbon. But you can get some bourbons a little pokey, a little bit more sweeter. You know, maybe you should try a beefier bourbon.
Okay.
If you want to. Again, this is all that with a caveat. If you really enjoy the way this is coming through, then do it. I would also personally reduce the coconut to a pound.
Okay.
And try that.
That was a lot. Yeah. Was it a pound and a half? Yeah.
Yeah. 1.3 pounds.
One and a third. That's a heavy addition. That's a lot of coconut in a beer. 5 gallons.
How long was the coconut on the beer?
5 days.
5 days. I mean, shit. I wonder if you went like 3/4 of a pound. I mean, that is a ton.
Yeah, but it soaked up a lot of beer for sure.
For sure. Well, and the problem with doing a beer like this, and you want to make these little adjustments to really dial it in if you want to, is that it's a big fucking beer. It's expensive. It takes a while to age. And so you're going to be have to make a lot of this over the next couple of years to dial it in. And I hope you're okay with that.
Yeah,
totally. Yeah. Well, you just made it this summer. It's not that old, honestly. That's pretty good turnaround there.
That's true.
Usually this would be like, oh, this is probably 6 months old or more, but no, it's already like damn smooth. I think part of it has to do with the chloride ratio. Like I can tell you're paying attention to, you know, everything. And I kind of joked with you the other day, people just tossing booze into their beer with reckless abandon. And no, nothing you did was with reckless abandon, except maybe the coconut, but it's like, you know, okay, let's go crazy with the coconut. And I think it's probably like JP said, it's probably covering up some of the other things. It's probably covering up, the booze it is a very smooth booze character. So, but I don't know, you don't want to use the cheap stuff either. So,
no,
you know,
the best, bourbon oaking I've had, the best experience was Wild Turkey, which, you know, isn't like cheap necessarily, but it's not necessarily like, you know, you don't go to a bar and ask for a Wild Turkey unless you're trying to get lucky, I guess. I don't know.
But, turkey and water, baby.
And then just, you know, and then soak that with some oak cubes, and then you let it sit for like 4 months to really let everything kind of like come out. How much bourbon did you add to this, John?
So I had a while back, I did a stout, and I was going off of, you know, some of the recipes on, you know, Northern Brewer and Moore Beer. And they were calling for about 12 ounces in 5 gallons. And I did that and I nearly puked. I had the whole thing. It was like taking a shot. So I just went directly have that. Yeah, I went from 11 ounces down to 5.5. And I agree, it's subtle. I'm not sure if I want to pick it up just a hair, maybe a few more ounces or so.
Yeah, give it a shot. That's the best thing about doing it in a keg is you can just add it.
Right.
Stir it up or shake. Yeah, and then you taste it and you figure out what's going on. You can always add some more.
Right.
So, yeah. So did you have temperature controlled fermentation for this?
Yeah, it was at it was right between 65 and 66.
Okay.
Yeah,
that was, I mean, to me, that's really such an achievement. And you know, when you're stepping up to making big beers from normal strength beer, to be able to have, you know, that temperature control and the yeast be healthy and to have something that attenuates really well and not be fusely and yucky. I mean, that's really great right there.
Yeah. Thank you. We don't want to be yucky.
No, yucky is bad.
It's a yuck free zone. Jonathan, do you have anything specific for the boys here?
So, you know, me and Cooper were kind of going back and forth. One was just, you know, the oak, because it really wasn't oaked. My initial and primary question was, should that be in that category? Because it's technically not aged in a vessel of wood.
Or go spice or vegetable, and then someone picks out the bourbon and you get in trouble, or just go like experimental and you're just in this weird land where like, well, that's not that different. That should just be in a 33B. You know, like it's kind of, there's a lot of no man's lands with, you know, with judging, where it's like, hey, this is a really special beer, and it's unique, and it's, you know, if you declare this and this and this, you got to be careful because not everybody's going to get that light bourbon, you know. So, I think it's in the right place. I think it's in the right place for this.
And then the other question is, and I know that Dr. Shar is a touch more sensitive to vanilla. What did you guys think about the vanilla level? Because obviously you don't have that barrel contributing that the vanillin character. So I'm using.
I didn't know it was there until you said it.
Okay.
I would have liked to have a little more.
Yeah.
And that goes back to what JP was saying about like the cubes. And I think just having some oak cubes would have gotten you a lot of vanilla character and a little more wood character. And, you know, I respect your thought process. I think that was really an interesting thought process, what you did. Having said that, I might, you know, throw in some oak cubes in for a couple of weeks.
Okay.
Maybe a month might have been a good idea. I mean, I don't know.
If you're doing cubes, I would not go any shorter than 2 months.
And yeah. what would you guys suggest? We're talking 2 ounces, 4 ounces.
In 5 gallons of this beer, I would probably go 1.5 ounces. It's been so long. It's hard to say. I wouldn't go like overdo it because you want the cube because you want the liquid to have time to penetrate the wood and get all of the different flavors. I don't know if you've ever seen like the oak cubes before, they have layers. And so the outer layer is off because it's a chopped up, you know, barrel. And so the outer layer is darker. And then as the layers go in, they're lighter and lighter and lighter. And you're getting different flavor combinations all throughout that. Whereas a chip is just one. They take wood chips and toast them to one level and that's it. So you get, it's very one dimensional. So cubes are better, but they take longer.
Got it.
Depends on what you want.
Got to permeate. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't go too crazy with the wood. It's the, you know, over boozed and over oaked beers are just, yeah.
It's no way to go through life, man.
No.
Going too crazy with the wood. Yeah. That's what she said.
Yeah. Ah. That's right. She sure did. All right. Anything else on either side of the aisle?
Just one last thing was bitterness.
Mm-hmm.
Was that relatively in the ballpark?
I like the balance with the bitterness. It was just, it was low and out of the way and a little bitterness from the malts, but it,
yeah,
you know, it's so smooth that you don't care. It's just balanced nicely for what it is.
I thought it worked well. Yeah.
Yeah.
If you noticed
I agree. I mean, the bitterness doesn't come up totally to match the malt,
yeah,
but this is a malt focused beer. So, I mean, you had it, it's like, it's close, which to me is all you really need in this. This is why you got an excellent score.
I would say is maybe don't adjust the bitterness,
yeah,
but maybe dial, like you're going like super chloride heavy. Maybe see what it comes out like if you dial back the chlorides just a touch. I mean, don't go sulfate crazy or anything, but just let it pull the chlorides back just a little touch and see what it does. Like it might have a little more interesting edge to it, and it might even accent the booze a little better and kind of just like, okay, it's got a little heft to it. Like if you go too chloride heavy, then it's just too smooth. And that, you know, it's nice to drink a beer that's this smooth, but I get like kind of a tanginess at the edges, like almost a sweetness at the edge. It's like, I don't know. There's like a little, not syrupy, but just like a, something like a little, just too, it's not cloying, but it's like the edge of it is just like not really there to stand up against all that kind of smooth sweetness, you know?
Gotcha.
And it's not super, again, it's not cloying. It's just like, it's semi-sweet, but it's like just all smooth and no like backbone kind of, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah. No, totally. Okay.
Yeah. But it's good where it is too. It's really, I'll drink the rest of this.
Absolutely.
Awesome.
All right, John. Well, if that's it, man, we'll let you go.
All right. Really appreciate it, guys. Thanks so much.
Yeah. Thank you, man.
Thanks, man.
Cheers.
All right, guys.
Nice chatting with you. Thanks for sharing your beer.
Bye.
All right. Thank you.
All right, everybody. We're going to take one last break. We're going to come back. We're going to wrap things up here on Dr. Homebrew. Hang on. We'll be right back.
Hello, fellow BNers. This is Sully from the 21st Amendment Brewery located in San Francisco, just 2 blocks from Giants Park. Before Nico and I opened the 21A and before I was a professional brewer, I homebrewed on my small four-burner apartment stove in a back house in Santa Monica, California, making my extract brews before graduating to the daunting idea of all-grain brewing. Homebrew books and information was hard to come by back then. The internet hadn't been invented yet, along with other things we take for granted today, like electricity and potable water. One thing I wish I had back then when I was learning was a radio show that could teach me the ins and outs of brewing and answer questions that I had about homebrewing, a resource for making great craft beer. The 21st Amendment Brewery is excited to be a proud sponsor of Dr. Homebrew, a great show that teaches you what you need to know about making incredible beer. Good stuff. Listen up. You might learn something. I certainly did. And thanks for your support. Tasty Crack Games.
Now, back to the examination.
All right, thanks for sticking around, everyone. We're wrapping it up here in Dr. Homebrew. We got our blood alcohol levels up, and we're ready to rock, man. Good beers definitely work the different ends of the stratosphere, the stratum, the straight, the range.
Actually, very good and excellent beers. So yeah,
We did. Well, I just meant like style wise, right? From ESB to Imperial Stout with coconut and Woodford.
It's funny. Maybe we'll go the other way on the next show. We'll just start with the crazy, big beer and go to something less crazy.
An American lager. Yeah, because it's funny. Like I've thought about doing, back when I was doing beers like this, using Woodford. But every time I was drinking it, it's like it's too round. And I think with a beer like this, because you're replicating the barrel that had the booze in it. There's none of, so the booze that you're getting out of it is in the wood. It's going to be oxidized a little bit. It's not going to be round and smooth. It's going to be pokey, and it's going to be, a little bit more assertive in the malt character. And it's just, so I don't think I stand by my assertion. I don't think Woodford was the choice, but again, it
even
all comes down to personal preference.
It's an excellent.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
It's the bourbon of the Kentucky Derby, for God's sakes.
Just drink it.
And that's the thing. Like, you wouldn't use like a Blanton's or something like that either, because they're very like similar, right? Or like a Basil Hayden, I think would be to add bourbon into the beer wouldn't work, but I think the barrels from those bourbons would work.
Or you could chase the beer with a shot of that bourbon,
Yeah, you absolutely could. All right, I think we're going to take off, everybody. Thank you very much for joining us here on Dr. Homebrew. If you're looking for more beer content, well, it depends on when you listen to this. We might have a show after this. We might have shows before this. Who can really tell?
And if you want to send us beer, you could email Brian at thebrewingnetwork.com. That's there Brian with an I. And get us your beer. We'll take anything. Really,
we're looking for a few good beers and probably some crummy ones.
Mead, cider, sake, what have you.
Anything, man. I would love to get some
hard seltzer. Does anyone make a good hard seltzer?
Kombucha.
Yeah.
It'd be cool to have a good homemade hard seltzer. I don't know. Those are still weird for me. I've had a couple good ones. But they gotta be, it's like you're drinking. You want it to be interesting. But we'll help you make. I mean, we'll talk to anything about anybody or something like that. All right, everybody. Thanks a lot for tuning in. And until next time, we'll see you later.